This is an ABC podcast.
ABC Radio Australia. This is Fresh Off the Field. The sporting spirit of the Pacific.
Ma lolele and welcome to Fresh Off the Field, the sporting pulse of the Pacific. My name is Sam Wykes. I am Tongan Australian and have made the leap from rugby to radio and absolutely love sharing stories from our Pacifica sports people on this show, as well as Nisian footy Monday and Fridays and that Pacific sports show on TV. If you've listened to the show before, you know I'm also joined by two co-hosts from across the Pacific, and each co-host will share the latest local sports news in the islands. So let's get to them right now. My first co-host is the sports editor for the national newspaper in Port Moresby. It's Patricia Kiamo. Great to have you on again, Patricia.
Hey, Sam. Yeah, it's always great to be on the show talking all things sports with you.
I'm surprised you actually even make it here because of, you know, motherhood. It's taken up a lot of your time now. It's been a month, I believe, since we last chatted with you. How is motherhood treating you in this short amount of time?
Well, it's been hectic now that I'm back at work, you know, juggling work. And then as soon as the day ends, I'm in a rush to go back home to where my other had to be a mom. So, but it's great so far.
And the sleep, that's okay? It's all happening?
Well, if I'm lucky, I get at least 4 hours of sleep. On bad days, three.
Oh, fair enough. Every time you ask new mothers and you ask about their sleep, they always reply, "What's sleep? What is that?" So I'm glad to hear you're at least getting 4 hours. But let's get to my other co-host, who is a former Nevan cricketer turned cricket commentator, Melissa Fade. Hello, Mel.
Hello, Sam. Hello, Patricia. I'm very excited to be on the show this morning again and talk about more Pacific sport. You know, I love my Pacific sport. It might be time to start branching out into some other sports, actually, like rugby, Sam. I might take over your sport, start talking about rugby next time I come on. But look, I'm very excited to be here this morning.
Hang on a tick. You stay in your lane, okay? You stick to cricket. I'll stick to footy, even though I cross in everyone else's lane and act like I'm an expert. But let's actually, speaking of cricket, the comeback, how's a shoulder injury? How's all that happening? And I believe you also did a degree. Is that right? Was that an assignment or you finished a degree for uni?
Look, the degree is still going. Hopefully it finishes soon because I'm a little bit over it at the moment with exams and assignments and all of that. But shoulder is great. I have been back to training for cricket and volleyball, so I've been doing a fair bit of both. Not playing yet, but hopefully playing soon.
Okay. It sounds, there's a lot of confidence in your voice, so let's watch this space, hey? See how the Rocky Boulder goes to roll the arm over, and we could see you very soon on the field. Hope so. But let's get to what's coming up on the show. You'll hear from a woman who represented her country in football and is now in coaching and development in Papua New Guinea.
This role would help me, not just me, but PNGF is supporting me to get other goalkeepers as well, because at the moment we don't have enough goalkeepers in the country at all.
Yes, that is Faith Kasiri, who used to be the goalkeeper for the PNG women's national team and wants to help bring in the next generation. As well, we'll meet Terence Coleman from the Vanuatu Basketball Federation and hear about plans for the mini games after Vanuatu missed out on the Pacific Games in 2023.
We were doing our best to try and have a spot in the Pacific Games of 2023 as a wild card, but most other countries didn't realize that Vanuatu still played basketball, which is annoying. But I had the opportunity to go to the Pacific Games in Solomons 2023 to watch, and that just, I think me and others there that were watching the games motivated us. We saw that we could compete in the games.
Plus, there's news in the world of tennis, rugby league and union, football, Paralympics, and with the Palau minigames another week closer, we'll check in there. And, of course, our usual fun and games, trivia. So let's rip in.
ABC Radio Australia. You're listening to Fresh Off the Field. Uniting the Pacific through the universal language of sports.
On Fresh Off the Field, you'll hear sports stories galore. And at the top of the show, we always like to start big. So let's see what's floating around on
Coconut Wireless.
The Coconut Wireless is where we discuss the biggest news story in your town. It's the sport or event or athlete that has everyone talking and the whole country has an opinion on. If it's making waves, it'll be on the Coconut Wireless. And Patricia, let's get straight to you in PNG. What have you got for us?
Apart from everyone talking about the disappointment in State of Origin, this is what's happening in Papua New Guinea. So a couple of weeks ago, PNG Rugby Football League started its National Youth Rugby League competition, and over the last week, the competition has sparked widespread public concerns and criticism over suspected overage players competing in the under 19 league. So the youth league is comprised of teams or players who are under the age of 19, but like I said, the competition has sparked widespread criticism mainly because, you know, fans and stakeholders have raised concerns regarding the physical appearance and performances of some players from a couple of teams, especially from the Highlands region, with claims being made that some of the players seem to be older than the age limit of 19. Now, particularly the Mount Hagen Eagles and Goroka Lahani's under 19 teams, most of the players don't look like they are under the age of 19, and people have raised concerns that that is unfair to the league. You know, when you have an aged youth age competition, it's supposed to be players from within that age limit. Some of the players seem to be a lot older than what they claim to be. So the two franchises have made dominant starts to the season with huge defeats in the last two rounds, beating teams from Lae and from Central and Port Moresby, and they are believed to to be fielding some players who are over the age of 19. Now, we've asked the PNG RFL on how they are verifying the ages of those players, and PNG RFA have responded to these allegations made and have defended the league's integrity, stating that they have a strong verification process and have worked with the six clubs participating in this competition, along with the PNG Civil and Identity Registry, where they prove the birth certificates of those players to validate their ages are within that range given. So the league has come back strong to reiterate that they have a strong verification process and have ruled out concerns of overage players, but still everyone's still talking about it, and some people are still finding it hard to swallow that those players are actually younger than 19 years or younger. So this is what's been buzzing around a lot especially in social media.
It brings back a lot of memories when I used to play in the Tongan tournaments here in Sydney, and the under-14s, and I'm lining up, and then someone's jumped on, and I was like, swear he was 20. They were massive, and some of them actually legit too. So it was it's always been some type of issue in the Pacific, but let's hope it all gets cleaned up, and there's always opportunities to play in older age groups in other competitions as well. But thanks for sharing that. And Mel, what's the talk of the town in Vanuatu?
Well, talk of the town in Vanuatu at the moment is Pacific Mini Games in Palau that's upcoming. But I think everyone's kind of waiting for teams to be announced, and there is a lot of speculation around who will be competing. I think some people to celebrate, some people to criticise, but that's the talk of the town at the moment for Vanuatu. But it's mostly around government funding as well for the teams, because I think that's always been an issue around Pacific Games. When I was still working for Vanuatu Cricket and Vanuatu, we've also come across the same issue, and I know a lot of other federations that are not the Football Federation are kind of facing the same issue, and that is currently what's happening at the moment. So there's about 130 athletes and officials that have been training and are already prepared to go to the Palau Games, but funding is very, very limited. And Vasanok has confirmed, Vasanok is the Vanuatu Association for Sport and National Olympic Committee, is
has come out to say that they are currently waiting for funding from the government. So it will be interesting to see how the government goes about funding this Pacific Mini Games as well, taking into account the earthquake in December, which destroyed a lot of the facilities as well, and the country is still in recovery. It's also been quite hard for the teams to kind of train and prepare for the game. So it would be a shame to see some of the sports not get to the Pacific Games if they don't get the funding. But Vasnok has also confirmed that they are they have reached out to DFAT, to the Australian High Commission in Vanuatu, to see if they could get support, if there is support in that space, to be able to send our athletes to the Palau Games. And I really do hope that they get to go, and if the government is unable to fund all the sports, that there will be other organizations and that will be able to support them, and hopefully businesses in Vanuatu can come together and the local community can come together to send the team to Palau for the mini games. And I know that's not impossible, because we did it in 2019 to send our women's team. We fully funded that. We fundraised for about 6 months to raise about $30,000 Australian to be able to send our full women's team to compete at the Pacific Games in 2019. So that's not impossible. It's just about whether, you know, just getting the community to rally around the sports that are supposed to go as well. And, you know, 130 athletes, given everything that's happened in Vanuatu, that are prepared to go to compete, I think it would be a huge loss if the government decides not to send them, because sports is currently one of the key things that is helping with recovery for young people in Vanuatu. So that is the talk of the town at the moment, and hopefully over the next couple of days or the next week and a half or 2 weeks, we see some change in that. Sam,
thank you so much for filling us in on what's floating around on the Coconut Wireless, Patricia and Melissa.
ABC Radio Australia. Fresh off the field. Feel the power of Pacific sports.
All right, it's time to find out what other sport is happening across our islands. And Patricia, we'll go to PNG. What's caught your eye here?
Yeah, a lot's happening on the local front. All competitions are full swinging, but something that's happening this weekend, well, tomorrow rather. So Papua New Guinea Football Association is hosting a two-match international friendly. They are hosting the Fiji Coolers here in Port Moresby, where the PNG Women's National Football Team will play against the Coolers in a two-match friendly. The first one is set for tomorrow, kickoff at 3 p.m. PNG time, and the second match is scheduled for Monday at the same time. So both Fiji and Papua New Guinea are using that friendly match as part of their preparation for the upcoming OFC Women's Nations Cup that is set for July 4 to 19 in Fiji. So this is an important friendly for both teams. I spoke to both coaches, and both Papua New Guinea and Fiji haven't had an international friendly in a while, so this will be really important for both teams to, you know, use it as their preparation to finalize their teams for the Nations Cup. Well, interestingly, both sides played in the finals of the last Nations Cup in 2022, where Fiji hosted, and Papua New Guinea beat Fiji to win their maiden Nations Cup title. So this will be an interesting preparation. We've always had that Melanesian rivalry between Papua New Guinea and Fiji when it comes to football. So it's going to be interesting to see how these two teams go about in that friendly. Yesterday, the Fiji women's team arrived in Port Moresby. The coach, Angeline Chua, assembled a really dynamic 22-member squad that includes a couple of young players from the under-16 and under-19 teams for Fiji. They recently competed in a couple of OFC tournaments, so they've also have the services of their New Zealand-based players, as well as two other players who were attached with Hakari United here in PNG and recently competed in the Women's Champions League, OFC Women's Champions League in Tahiti. So, both sides have the depth in their squad. Tomorrow's friendly will see how that Malaysian rivalry goes.
Oh, it's always great news when you get to play more competitive games in preparation to help get ready for big tournaments. So it's good to hear that is happening. And what about from across the Pacific? What have you got for us?
Yes, so again, we're going to talk about Fiji again. So Fiji is currently hosting the Oceania Under 20 Rugby Challenge that's featuring teams from Tonga, Samoa, as well as a Canadian team along with the home side. So the host, Fiji. Yesterday, the tournament started at the King Charles Park in Nandi and will continue through to next Saturday. So yesterday's round one saw the Canadian side. They opened the tournament with a gutsy 44-20 win over Samoa, while the clash between Tonga and Fiji ended 46-22 in favour of the Tongans. So it was a big score margin for both games just on the first day. So with round one completed yesterday, now the teams will, you know, recover and prepare for the second round, which is on Monday, before they wrap up the final round next Saturday. So on Monday, Samoa will take on Tonga, while the hosts Fiji will face off against the Canadians. Now, interestingly, as part of this year's Oceania Rugby tournaments in Fiji, each of the visiting team is adopting a school. So for this tournament in Nadi, through Oceania Rugby's Get Into Rugby program, the teams adopted schools and they did a special delivery yesterday with jerseys for the under 20 teams that each of the schools will be supporting. So Fiji, Tonga, Samoa and Canada visited those schools that they were adopted by and presented them with jerseys. So the students from those schools wore those jerseys and supported the countries that they partnered with during the opening round yesterday. So that was an interesting, you know, an interesting take to see a different side of how those teams, you know, mix around with the locals there. So
I absolutely love that. And I know I'm supposed to be neutral here, being, you know, we're sharing a love across the Pacific, but go Tonga in my eyes. Great win for them. And I think for Fiji as well, I believe that a lot of the Drua Academy players that could be eligible for that 20s team aren't playing in that 20s team. I think the Drua have taken precedence over their selection. So I know there would be a weaker side for Fiji, so I wouldn't read too much into that. But Mel, let's get over to you. What do you want to share?
Well, look, Vanuatu, we've just hosted our 2025 National Paralympic Championships, and the Vanuatu Paralympic hosted that this month from over 2 days, I think over the 20th and the 21st of May, if I'm correct. My dates are probably wrong. I'm fully depending on Vanuatu Daily Post here to give me the correct date. But yes, over 2 days, the Vanuatu Paralympics Committee hosted their 2025 National Championships. And this championships is not like any other traditional sporting championships where you bring your best athletes and compete and win medals and go back and be the champion for Vanuatu in that period of time for this year, for the period, for the year. For the Paralympic Committee, so the Vanuatu National Para Championships is made up of new para athletes who have just discovered para sport and have just discovered that they can in fact play sport, and they've brought them together to get their classifications done, to compete against each other, and also find potential athletes that could that the Vanuatu Paralympics Committee could train for upcoming tournaments. So the competition happened in Port Vila. It happened down at Cormann Stadium in Port Vila, and it involved just over 30 para athletes from across the country, and they all travelled from six provincial hubs. So from Malekula, Sanma, Santo, Luganville, and then from Port Vila, Efate and Tana. And this is part of the Vanuatu Paralympic Committee's development program. And so for many of the competitors, this was their first national level tournament. It was their first tournament they've competed in. So it makes it a milestone moment for them personally, and also for the growth of parasport in Vanuatu. And our first Commonwealth Games medal that we've ever won is a bronze medal in para-javelin from Friana Quivira, and she's from Santo, and she was also part of one of our very first national championships, and she was identified from this national championships a couple of years ago. But in this particular national championships, the events included seated javelin throw. They did seated shot put, traditional javelin and shot put, and as well as a couple of track events. And this was supported by delegates from Oceania Paralympic Committee as well, who were there to help with the athlete classification, which is very important. We don't have the expertise in Vanuatu to be able to classify our para athletes, but when we do have help, we take full advantage of it, because it's really important for the athletes to be able to have a classification as well, which is a key step for those of them who will be looking to compete internationally for Vanuatu. So the championships, not only if you haven't watched, I'm really encouraging people to go and watch the debrief on the Vanuatu Daily Post website. There is a great video on there debriefing this with the team manager from Luganville as well, talking about, you know, how this is the first time many of these athletes have received exposure, not just in sport, but in society as well, in the community. And I'm very happy that, again, like, I'm very big on the power of sport, and I think every time I come on the show, I talk about it so much. But, I mean, this is a great example for that. And I personally love parasport. I love covering it at the Pacific Games, mini games, any sport. I just love parasport. But I think, the president of the Vanuatu Paralympic Committee also acknowledged the hard work of the coaches who were there as well, who was Mary Estelle Bahuk, our golden mama, and Denny Kalanga. Both of these two individuals have committed and have dedicated their time to Vanuatu parasport since 2019, and they have shaped a lot of the national championships to what it is today. So I'm going to leave this local sports report, Sam, by encouraging people, if you haven't watched the videos on our para athletes in Vanuatu, I implore everybody to go on the Vanuatu Paralympics website and watch. They have three videos on their website. The first one, the one that, you know, that's really, really talks about the journey of our para athletes, is The Hidden People. The title is The Hidden People. And then there's the other one that's titled Access and Outreach. All of them are on the same page on the website. And the other one is Mitu Misave Mekem, which is basically saying, I can do it, like, me too. I implore people to go and watch.
Great work, Mel. I love hearing about our talented para-athletes, and I know our listeners do as well. So keep bringing those stories to us, and we'll keep sharing them and shining light on our talented athletes across the Pacific. But let's get to across the Pacific now. What have you got for us there? What's grabbed your attention?
Across the Pacific, it's the 2025 Billie Jean King Cup, and for Asia and Oceania Group 2. Team Pacific is all set for the 28th for the Billie Jean Cup in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia, which will kick off on the 16th of June. So that's upcoming. So everyone, if you're listening, keep an eye out for this. Support our Oceania, the Pacific Oceania team, and official team list has just been confirmed as well. It has been confirmed by the Oceania Tennis Federation, and the athletes representing us in our region this year will be Violet Apisa from Papua New Guinea, Patricia Apisa as well from Papua New Guinea, those sisters. And we have Caroline Delaunay from New Caledonia and Litia Godine from American Samoa. But leading the team will be Cyril Jacopé from Vanuatu as the non-playing captain, and Abigail Terry Apisa, who is the auntie of Violet and Patricia. She is going to be, will be supporting as vice captain. So the Apisa family connection is a standout this year, and as it has been for Pacific Oceania tennis for a number of years. Great athletes, great tennis players, and they will continue to carry Papua New Guinea's tennis legacy and Oceania as well into the international stage. But this Group 2 event features 11 teams from across the region, Asia and Oceania. Our Pacific Oceania team is one of 11 teams. So the other teams that will be competing will be from Indonesia, from Iran, from Kazakhstan, but also Malaysia, Mongolia will also be there. Northern Mariana Islands will also be there. The Philippines, Singapore, and Uzbekistan will also be there. And then our team, which is the Pacific Oceania team, in the Oceania region. But the action will begin with a captain's meeting and official draw on Sunday, the 15th of June, with the winners earning promotion to Group 1 in 2026. So there's a lot at stake here for the teams. Promotion to Group 1 in 2026 is what they are playing for. And then the lower-ranked teams will also be playing positional matches, with the bottom two facing relegation. So we are cheering for our teams to get into Group 1 or to not face relegation. But either way, our athletes are doing really well representing us in the international stage, and we've got a great team who will be competing. And whilst there will be no TV coverage, I don't think, there will be live streaming available, so Pacific fans can also cheer and support their team from home.
You're flying, Mel. Outstanding work. Thank you to both of you, actually, Patricia and Mel. Always great to hear about the sport taking place throughout our Pacific Islands.
Gyaman Stapwe.
Yes, here we go. Gyaman Stapwe. We're going to break up the sporting chat just for a little bit and have some fun and see who is a good liar. And we play Gyaman Stapwe, which is Tok Pisin for Pick the Lie. And each co-host will tell us three things about themselves. Two will be true and one will be a lie. And the other two co-hosts will try to Gyaman Stapwe. And I know our other hosts are rattling their brain at the moment, trying to figure out how many lies can we keep telling on this segment, running out of options. But we'll go with Patricia. Let's start with you.
All right, let's see if I still have enough lies to tell. So the first one, I am left-handed. I used to run track in primary school, and I don't know how to swim.
Let's go, Mel. What are you thinking here?
The chances of being left-handed, not left-handed. But also, if someone from Vanuatu tells me that they can't swim, I won't believe them. I think the lie is that you can't swim.
That's, you're picking that as the lie. So you believe that she is lefty and she used to run track, but not...
Yes.
But can't... But, yeah, swimming's the lie. Are you Patricia, are you creative? Are you a creative person?
Here we go.
I am.
Sam, just don't get hints.
I'm just trying to get it because, you know, left-handed... Yeah, well, we've got to here. That's your fault for not asking for more clues. All right, I'm going to go opposite you. I'm going to go lefty then. That's the lie. Okay.
Well, Sam, you got it right. I am not left-handed. I'm right-handed.
Yes.
So, yeah, guys.
Yes, okay.
Don't hate me, but I don't know how to swim. It's a shame for a Pacific Islander.
No, it's not. It's definitely not a shame. See, mate, there's half of us. That's why they say we're still on the islands, because we can't swim. I've said this. Is that okay to say? I can't swim, like, well. Like, I can float and I can survive. But hey, we saw it at the games. I can't swim, so let's just get onto you now, Mel. After my comments, I'm digging a hole even further. Let's get to you.
I'm just letting you dig.
All right, what have you got for us, Mel?
I'm running out of lies, so I think we'll just go to my favorite teams, my favorite sporting team. So this is not limited to the Pacific. Tottenham is my favorite football team. Chicago Bulls are my favorite NBA team. And Japan is my favourite volleyball team in the Volleyball Nations League.
I reckon I've got this here, Patricia, but I'll let you do the honours just to see.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the last one. I don't think Japan is your favourite team. I'm sorry. I'm going to go with that.
Okay. Well, I guess I know Tottenham is her favourite team. Like, her stories were pumping on Instagram. The amount of time she reshared that they are the new champs. Aussie Ange, well done. And Chicago Bulls. I'm actually at Japan. Volleyball is massive over in Japan. So to throw that in there, I feel like that has to be true. And so I'm going to go with number two, Chicago Bulls is not your team because you're too young for the Michael Jordan era.
Ding, ding, ding. Sam, you got it again.
Ah, there we go.
Sam's on fire.
Yes.
Tottenham's my favourite football team. My stories have been flooded with that win. But LA Lakers are my favorite NBA team. So I'm a Lakers girl. And Japan is indeed my favorite volleyball team, both men and women's. They are just really good in volleyball and they play volleyball that is smart, and I like smart sports people.
Because you're a volleyball as well, and I'm only saying that as well because my kids fell in love with volleyball because of the anime cartoon.
Yes, because of anime.
Anime. So that's why I guess that one as well. Outstanding work, you two, and me as well, of course, for being 100%. Just to toot my own horn. But thanks for playing. We learn something new every week.
Fresh off the field. The Sporting Pulse of the Pacific. ABC Radio Australia.
Okay, it's time to chat to some of the talented people in the Pacific, as well as hearing about the sports results and stories. We always love hearing from everyone involved in the game, and each week we hear some of the chats from across the Pacific. And Patricia, let's start with you. Who did you speak to this week?
This week I spoke to Papua New Guinea women's goalkeeper, Faith Kasiri, who is now the women's football development goalkeeping officer here with the PNG Football Association. So I asked Faith about, you know, what her appointment means to her.
Well, this appointment wasn't a surprise, actually. I was hoping to somehow, if I finish playing, you know, representing the country and all that, I would find myself in the FA and try to like help other goalkeepers, and then I was still working in Airways, making time here after work. We'll just come in the office and be like, oh, what's going on, you know, what are we doing with the goalkeepers, the senior women's team, like development teams and stuff. And then just with the interest that I was showing at the time, so they were like, you know what, why don't we just give her something? So they offered me the job without even thinking about it. I resigned the next day. And yeah, it was actually exciting for me. This is what I've always wanted to do. And it would, like, it's my passion, taking up this role as well. And also, this role would help me, not just me, but with the other girls. Like, it would give me, PNGFA supporting me to get other goalkeepers as well, because at the moment we don't have enough goalkeepers in the country, like, at all. Development teams under 15, 16, 17, all the way up to the senior women's team. So that's a struggle for us women's football in the country. And I'm so excited that they offered me this role, and I grabbed it with both ends.
Shortly after your appointment, you had the opportunity to travel with the under-16 women's team. That was your first experience traveling as a coach. How was that like, you know, seeing those young girls out there?
It was a challenge for me, I would say. Before that, I had to sit for goalkeeping introduction course, just something for me to, like, you know, it's like a way on my appointment as the goalkeeper coach for the under 16 girls. It was a challenge for me because coaching the development teams is way other than coaching the senior women's team or the senior men's team, because it's like you're teaching them basics, you're teaching them things that they don't know about, and you're introducing it to them. So it's quite a challenge, but we have to just be patient with them and stuff. And yeah, they did well, but there's like a lot of development areas that we pointed out, and we're gonna work on that.
For you personally, you know, you started playing at a very young age of 14, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, back then, like, you didn't have what you're doing now for the young mm-hmm. girls. You didn't have that before. So how was it like for you as a young girl, you know, mm-hmm. starting out and, you know, deciding to be a goalkeeper?
Okay, it was very hard. I had to work with so many different coaches, like, different coaches. They have their own style of coaching. But then, like, you may have the best coaches and stuff, but it all comes down to you, how you dedicate your time, how committed you are, and, you know, if you're willing to learn something, then you're going to learn, you know? Yeah, entirely up to you now as a player, like, how committed you are, and if you focus on what you're trying to get, and basically setting your goals for each training as well. Yeah, so I had to learn all of that at a very young age coming up, And yeah, I kind of like fell in love with it because it was like very, it was fun, you know, it was different. It was totally different from what the infield players are doing. We were able to catch the ball, dive and do all these things, and it was fun. So I just thought it was fun. And yeah, I just never stopped learning from then. I'm still learning. So
what motivated you to be a goalkeeper? I know a lot of kids growing up, they tend to want to kick the ball, be an infield player, as opposed to being a goalkeeper. So what was one thing that pushed you towards that direction?
Okay, it was a last-minute change at the camp, right? So I started off playing as the central backs. And then when we got to the camp, one of my coaches asked me, what position are you playing? So I was like, I looked at my brother, my late brother. I looked at him, and he looked at me. And then seeing everybody there, I had the advantage of like my height. I was quite tall at the time. I was like, what, 13? Yeah. So he's like, you know what? Just go play keeper. And I was like, no, don't make me do this. Don't. But he was like, trust me. Like, there's literally no goalkeeper. So there's two girls there, but I was a tall one. So he's like, just go. And I didn't want to. I was crying. He dragged me down the hallway, all the way down to the room. He's like, yeah, there you go. And then he spoke to me afterwards while I was sobbing. He was like, you have to just learn, you know, because I love to learn. And he knows that, you know, we were homeschooled when we were younger. So he's like, just stay committed. Try to learn as much as possible from your coaches. And yeah, you just have fun. You're going to do great. And yeah, he kind of convinced me to play goalkeeper, but I would say that I was trained to be a goalkeeper, and it's not something that's, you know, where like, okay, it's a talent, you know, it's like, I was actually trained to like how to catch a ball, do this and do that. So yeah.
Throughout your playing career, what is one tournament or one game that, you know, you hold most dear to you, or a memorable moment in your playing career?
I would say the U20 World Cup. It was a challenge for me. Like, I was 15, 16 at the time, and having to balance both like my education and then football at the same time. We'd wake up like 5 a.m. in the morning and then go out on the field, train, wash, school, and then finish 2:30. They would let us go at 2:30, come back, train. It was so hard. And especially being at the stage, like for Papua New Guineans, like we're not used to these things, like, you know, going to school and come back and then train. Mentally, we're not there yet as compared to other countries. And it was actually really hard, but I was just so thankful for my players, my coaches, management, like got me throughout the year. And I was also able to play the last game against Korea. And yeah, I think that's one of my highlights. In my football career.
And now transitioning into your role as a goalkeeper coach now, what would be an advice you want to give to young girls out there who want to grow up and be the next Faith Kasseri?
I feel like most girls, they think that goalkeeping is just like you just go in goal and stand there and they'll kick the balls at you and you just, you know. Goalkeeping is like, being a goalkeeper is like we play a very like important role in the game as well, like from organizing the team and from initiating attack, you know, things like that. So it's very important, and it's fun too, you know. You get to do all these different things, and you know, having to control the game and the players as well. And I just want to say that maybe they try goalkeeping, and scoring goals is just same as saving goals. It's the best feeling, just if you're saving a goal. It's like you're saving the team, you know? But having to, like, play for your national team and then going out of the countries, and then if you save a goal, it's like you saved your country, you know? That's what I always think about, like, whenever, like, I go inside the field, I'm like, yeah, if I save that goal, it's like I'm saving my country, not just me or the team. It's like the whole country. So I always have that at the back of my mind. And yeah, it's like you're the hero, you know? You know. So I would give, advise the girls to, like, take up goalkeeping, you know? It's fun. Try it out. You never know. You might like it. So yeah, and just never stop learning.
Yeah. Last question. Now you are juggling, you know, training and playing for the national team as well as your new role here. How are you finding that?
Oh, that. So I've already started my goalkeeping festivals over the weekend, and I talking to the coaches, the new coaches that we ran, I think we held the goalkeeping introduction course 3 weeks ago. Yeah, so we managed to get like a couple of coaches, and these coaches, Port Moresby based, they were helping us to run the programs and stuff every Saturday. And yeah, so it's like my focus is like I have to like, okay, I'm just like living in the moment. So like if I'm doing coaching now, my focus is like coaching, right? And then I know that, okay, after this, I'm going to have like a training, right? So I'm going to have to take this hat off and then put on my player hat, and it's like training. Finish from there, and I have to focus on my recovery as well. Go back home, shut down my phone if I have to. Sometimes I'm just, you know, and then come back in the morning, training, and then work. It's very tiring. But as time goes by, I think my body's going to get used to it, but it's quite hard, but it's a commitment that I made, and I want to see results. So if I want to see results, I have to go through the hard way, right? Nothing is easy, and I wanted to do all these three things, like work, coaching at the same time, and try to play as well. So if it's going to be hard, then let it be, because we want to see results.
Yep, she's doing some amazing work over there. So well done, chatting with her. And let's go to you now, Melissa. Who did you chat with?
Well, I had the privilege of chatting with Terence Coleman, who is a development officer for Vanuatu Basketball Federation in Vanuatu. We talked about basketball and their comeback, the comeback that they're making after missing out on a few competitions in the last couple of years. But we started off our conversation, and I asked him how he would describe where things are right now.
Yeah, I think after COVID, we had a big strike in basketball and like all of our other sports here. But for the last 3 years, I've been a big part of the federation, being involved in all the activities they run other side of the country, like north of Fate, all that. And yeah, I think management, all that for the past 3 years has been at an all-time high. Just last year, we had our first trip overseas in a while for basketball. Just the development squad to prepare for the Palau Games right now. So, yeah, I think all-time high for us in the Basketball Federation.
That sounds amazing. And you did mention the Palau Mini Games, and I do want to talk about the Palau Mini Games today. The Pacific Mini Games are in about a month from today. I think it starts on the 29th of June. Will Vanuatu Basketball be sending two teams? Are you sending any teams at all? Is it going to be men and women's, or just men, just women?
Yeah, Vanuatu is planning to send a full team for both men and women. The Palau Games will be 3v3, so it'll be made up of four players each, so four for men, four for women. It's between the ages of 18 to 23, which is a requirement, and yeah, the turnouts have been amazing over the past 3 months. We've been preparing for these games, and yeah. So it'll be four boys, four women going to the Palau Games this year for us.
How are you tracking on that at the moment? Have you kind of got your teams set to go to Palau Games already, or will we be hearing about that in the next couple of weeks?
So this week is the week where we're submitting our final four, and then these final four for the next month will just be practicing 4 or 5 days a week for the games until they're off on the 29th.
Well, that's really, really exciting, because Vanuatu Basketball Federation did not compete at the 2023 Pacific Games in Solomon Islands. So, you know, how have you been preparing for the mini games after what has been a significant break in your appearance at any version of the Pacific Games since 2019 in Samoa?
Yeah, we were doing our best to try and have a spot in the Pacific Games of 2023 as a wild card. But most other countries didn't realize that Vanuatu still played basketball, which is annoying. But I had the opportunity to go to the Pacific Games in Solomons 2023 to watch. And that just, I think me and others there that were watching the games motivated us. We saw that we could compete in the games. So over the past 2 years, we've been preparing for that. Like I mentioned earlier, last year, I think it was September, we had four boys, four girls under the ages of 23 go to Australia and Gold Coast for a development squad. That squad was basically, the FIBA Oceania invited us there to train us and prepare us for the upcoming Palau Games. And we were very fortunate and we've made great use of that. And that's what we've been using to prepare us. And all everything we've learned from there, we've been using the past 3 or 4 months to develop our squad for the Palau Games.
I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here and just ask you what are sort of the expectations that you have for the teams going to Palau for the games?
For the girls, actually, I expect more from the girls because from their showing, because I don't have the exact number of teams that went to Australia. I think it was around 12 Pacific Island countries that went there. And we had practice games and stuff, but the girls actually competed. And the amazing thing was when they were in Oz, they actually beat the Fijian team, which had a bronze medalist for Pacific Games in their team, which is actually really cool. So I think the girls have a good chance of competing. And the boys, we just want to, since it's a young development squad, I think we can compete, but we don't know how we stand up against since we lack the height, but we still want to compete. And yeah, I think the girls, high expectations for them to do well, and the boys, I think we're just going to go out there, do our best. If we win, we win. If we lose as a team.
And speaking of winning, losing as a team, other than the Mini Games, is there any other regional or international tournaments or competitions that Vanuatu Basketball will be competing in or potentially competing in this year, whether it's 3-on-3 or 5-a-side basketball?
Yes. I'm glad you brought that up because the big one that we're preparing for right now is the Melanesian Cup in October, which will be in Solomons. Yeah. So that one, that's basically our ticket to go to the Pacific Games. So in order to qualify for the Pacific Games, the Melanesian Cup is the route to do that. So first and second in the Melanesian Cup get put towards, like, entered into the Pacific Games. And if you do not get first or second, the only other way you can enter is a wild card. But the Melanesian Cup in October is one that we're really looking for.
That sounds like a very big year for Vanuatu basketball. You've gone from not really having much international competitions in the last 5 years, if I'm doing my math correctly, to now having competitions this year with the Mini Games and then the Melanesian Cup as well, which is coming up in a couple of months. Just looking ahead in general for Vanuatu Basketball Federation, where do we go from here? What's the vision?
That's a good question. I'd say we want to have Vanuatu out there on the map. Like I'd say for basketball-wise, we want to be able to compete in these games. Want to show people that we have a squad here, we have potential here, and yeah, I reckon just the whole like local competitions are at an all-time like high in participation-wise. And we're seeing a lot more youths get involved in basketball as well. Like, I'm down at Stard every single day playing basketball, and it's always fully packed with over, like, 20, 30 people. So, yeah, just increasing popularity of basketball around Vanuatu, hopefully. And, yeah, competing overseas. And planting our roots here, I'd say, is the main one. Younger people, you know, that's a big problem in the community these days of people reveling around. We hope basketball can also be a way for them to get away from that and see that as an opportunity for them as well.
Love it. Absolutely love it. So thank you, Tomas, actually. Is that how we, yep, that's how we say it. Thank you, Tomas. Patricia Mill, some wonderful stories of our amazing sporting talent from across the Pacific.
Fresh off the dome.
All right, before we go, I want to play Quizmaster and test your knowledge of sport in the Pacific. And every week I'll ask, hey, there's a bit
I've
of
just
nerves.
Rolled my sleeves up.
Yes, oh, nerves and confidence at the same time. I love it. Every week I'll ask three questions. Patricia Mill, you know the drill. Use your name as your buzzer if you think you know the answer. And of course, you can play along at home too. Let's get into Fresh Off the Dome. Question number one is multiple choice. Samoan Australian tennis player Destiny Ayava played in the French Open this week. She unfortunately lost in the first round to a player from which country? Is it A, France, B, Slovenia, or C, Ukraine?
Melissa.
Go for it, Mel.
I'm going to guess Ukraine.
Oh, you're on fire. Ding, ding, ding. That is correct. A bonus point if you can tell me who she played against.
And I can't tell you that.
Okay, I'll tell you it right now. It was Diana Yastremska. I think I got that right.
I was going to say, I'm like, did you get that right?
I'm not too sure. But let's go to question number two. The men's state of origin was last night. Up the Blues. Name one Pacifica athlete who featured in either New South Wales or Queensland team. And Patricia, was that a little cough there? Was that a little cough there?
Patricia.
That's not fair.
Why is it not fair?
It's rugby.
Well, it's rugby league.
Xavier Coates.
Okay. Xavier
Coates. Bonus point, he's from PNG.
Okay. Yes, yes. Okay, give me another one then. Give me one other player.
Hemiso Tabuaifido.
Okay, there we go. Perfect.
I almost yelled out the hammer, but then I realised I have to call out his proper name.
Oh, awesome, awesome. Ben, remember you can hear every NRL game live on Radio Australia as well as Origin. And the third game in the women's series is on tonight in Newcastle in Australia. So you'll hear that right here later on tonight. Let's get to question number three. The 10th annual college badminton tournament was held last week in the Cook Islands with Atutaki's Arauira College winning the junior and senior divisions. Spell Atutaki.
Melissa.
Oh, the uni degree is going to come in here, I believe.
It is A-I-T-U-T-A-K-I.
That is correct, Mel. You are our winner today for Fresh Off the Dome. Well
Let's
done.
Let's go.
Let's go. Let's go. I like that.
This is my hype for the day, you know? It's the end of the week. I have assignments due. This makes me feel good. I can go and do my assignments.
Yeah, you can go and attack it after that fantastic win on Fresh Off the Dome. But that brings us to the end of our show this week. A big thank you to my co-host, sports editor for the national newspaper, Import Moresby. Thank you to Mas Patricia Kiamo.
Thank you so much, Sam. This was fun. And Mel, hey, congratulations twice over. You must be really happy. Spurs won Man United. Oh, that's my team as well, so I'm a little salty.
Patricia, you're a Queensland supporter, yeah?
Yes, I am.
It's been a tough 24 hours. But, hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And thank you to my other co-host, former Nevan cricketer and commentator. Thank you, Tomas. Melissa Friday, you are outstanding.
Thank you to my Sam and thank you to my Patricia. It's always, always fun to be on the show, talk about all things Pacific sport and to have a good laugh and just enjoy the beauty that is Pacific sport.
Yeah, absolutely, except rugby, so make sure you brush up on your knowledge, okay, for next time you're on. But thanks for listening to Fresh Off the Field, the sporting pulse of the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia. I'll be back next week with two new co-hosts talking all things sport in our region. And this episode was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people.
This program has been funded by the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade.